All right. Well, last week we left off with Joseph and his brothers. They finally, Joseph finally revealed himself to his brothers, and they were stunned. They were shocked, and obviously a little bit afraid, not knowing, how Joseph was going to treat them, given that they had treated him so badly. And we just see the reconciliation, and we see how Joseph was so kind and forgiving and loving to them. And then we saw how his brothers, they went back home as Joseph encouraged them to tell their father about all these things that happened, and how Joseph was inviting them to go to Egypt and to come under his covering, so to speak. And that Jacob, when he heard this, his heart, it says here, it stood still, because he just couldn't believe what he was hearing. And so, for 22 years, he was led to believe that Joseph was dead, that he would never see him ever again. And yet here now he's being told that he's alive, and that all these things. And it was just overwhelming to him. But then as he listened to them, and this is in chapter 45, verse 27, but when they told him everything that Joseph said, and he was able to see all the evidence, he was able to see the carts that Joseph sent to carry him and the whole family back, he said, that's enough. I've seen enough. I believe it, despite the fact that, those sons of him had questionable character at times, they were known to tell a lie from time to time. He believed them, and he believed that what he had seen was enough. And so as we launch into chapter 46, we read in the first verse, it says, "So Israel took his journey with all that he had, and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac." And so in that first verse, we see that that Jacob, as we just read in the last part of chapter 45, he was convinced by all of the circumstances that, I'm gonna go. I want to go see my son Joseph, who I haven't seen for 22 years. So he came to Beersheba. He was on the way to Egypt. And as he launches out, he comes to Beersheba, and he begins to offer sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. So this place, Beersheba, is a significant place in the sense that it was the place where God had previously spoke to Abraham, his grandfather, and to Isaac, and had given them revelation. And so he comes here to Beersheba. He comes prayerfully, and he comes in a manner that is circumspect, okay? And so there's something in this one verse that I think is really significant, and that is that as badly as he wanted to see his son Joseph, he wanted to know that what he was doing was in God's will. In other words, he wanted God's permission to do what he's doing. And I think this is very instructive to us. Because many times in our lives, we can look at the circumstances, we can look at what we can see with our eyes, and we can reason in our minds that, this is of God. This is what the Lord wants me to do. It's like, everything is pointing to that. But Jacob, at this stage in his life, was at a stage of maturity where he wanted to hear from God, even though there were these circumstances, even though it seemed like everything was pointing and saying, yes, it's okay, you should go, he wanted to hear from God. And he was really concerned about two things. One is he wanted to know that in going to Egypt with and taking his family there, that they would be safe, number one. And number two, he wanted to make sure that his family would not be absorbed into Egypt and thus lose, you know, the bloodline or the distinctiveness of his family, the family that God had promised to bring the Messiah out of. So he didn't want to destroy the plan of God for his family. And so Jacob wanted to know that he was doing God's will. And we see here that he really, in his concern about the family, that he's really acting in accord with his birthright. So remember we talked about like how there was an inheritance that you would receive, you know, from being the oldest son, you would get a double portion, but also there was the birthright, and that birthright had to do with, you know, leading the family and teaching the family and making sure that everything moved on to the next generation, that the relationship and everything that was going on with that particular person, that he was passing it on down to the next generation. And so here Jacob is, you know, feeling like he's getting to the end of his life. And so he wants to make sure that he's not making a big mistake that would thwart the plan of God. And so it's not, you know, just about receiving an inheritance and living a blessed or comfortable life. It's about leading the family within the will of God to continue in God's ways. And that is something, you know, that sort of sentiment that Jacob had is the same kind of sentiment that we should have as Christians. If you're a father or a mother, you're wanting to have that, you know, the things of God to continue in your family. And so it's not just about you. It's not just about you being blessed and living well and comfortable. It's about keeping that going. And so we see here that he comes prayerfully here, even though he saw the cards, even though he heard about Joseph's invite and Pharaoh's and even though God had made it clear to him that Canaan was the land that was promised, now he's seeing these signs that are saying, hey, go up to Egypt. So that was another thing that was likely creating a question mark in his mind. So he's looking at everything. And so this is a thing I'm wanting to dwell on this a little bit, because there's a lot of wisdom in what's going on here, because a lot of times we as Christians, we can kind of allow ourselves to be taken in by what we see and what the circumstances are, you know, like just, you know, it could be, you know, anything from like the crazy, like we're just like, oh, wow, like what a coincidence. Like, you know, like, I don't know what it is. Like, you know, you went to this school or you grew up here and I grew up here. Like maybe this is meant to be, or, you know, whatever the circumstances that we do sometimes in life, where we just look at different things and we think, oh, that must be the Lord speaking. Instead, we see that Jacob does start out, right? Because he goes to Beersheba. So it's not like he stayed back and was waiting for the Lord to tell him. But he actually started out. But what he did was he started out prayerfully. And I use that word, that other word, circumspectly. In other words, so he was prayerful. He wanted to hear from God. I've heard from Joseph. I've heard from Pharaoh. I've looked at the circumstances, but I want to hear from God. Okay? So that was the attitude that he came into this with. And so he was prayerful and he was continuing to look at everything else. that was going on around him. And so we see in the next verse here, verse 2, it says, "Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, 'Jacob, Jacob.' And he said, 'Here I am.'" And so here we see this wonderful thing that God speaks to Israel. God speaks to his people, and he knows us by name. "Jacob, Jacob," he called out. He knows him by name, and he's there to provide, to speak to Jacob, to provide confirmation to him. And so when we seek after him and ask, and look to him to guide us, then he will be, he will honor that, and he will speak to us. One other thing I want to say about that whole point of the way that we walk and the way that we're walking, not necessarily looking at what we see or circumstances, but wanting to hear from God and that sort of thing, is that we walk by faith and not by sight. We don't walk based upon what we see. We walk based upon faith in God and in his word. So we should be looking in his word. We should be praying and waiting for the Lord to speak to us and to lead and guide us in those ways. And I say all this because I've seen so many times where sometimes where Christians will make those kinds of mistakes, and where it's really like we have a desire within ourselves to do something, and so we're wanting to look at all the facts and to see those facts as pointing towards, me doing that's the Lord's way of saying that's what I should do. But and so the point is, I'm not trying to make it so that we would be gripped in fear and indecision and that sort of thing, but just that we should look at Jacob as an example of how we should approach everything in our lives in a very prayerful way and in a way that is circumspect. Verse 3, it says, "And he said, 'I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes.'" So here the Lord speaks, and he makes many promises. And this is also very reassuring for Jacob, because in Jacob's life, every time he made an important decision, the Lord was there to tell him. So even like when he came to the conclusion when he was with Laban, his uncle, and Joseph was born, and he had this belief or this thought in his heart, it's time for me to go back to Canaan. The Lord confirmed that by telling him, yes, it's time for you to get up and to go back. And even when he was in Shechem and all that stuff happened where his sons engaged in those cruel acts of killing that entire village of people, that and he was really fearful that all the surrounding Canaanite nations would come and wipe them off the face of the earth. The Lord, in that case as well, told Jacob, okay, it's time to go. So this is a very comfortable place, and that's how it should be for us, right? As Christians, that should be the comfort zone for us, is to be operating where we're looking to the Lord for his direction. But here we see now that not only does the Lord speak to Jacob and tell him that to go and not to fear going to Egypt. And whenever we see where the Lord is speaking to someone and he says, don't do something, like don't fear, we know that Jacob was incredibly fearful, even though he was moving, even though he had a a desire to see his son Jake, Joseph. He was fearful, but and so the Lord comforts him and assures him, but he also gives him four promises. The first promise is, he says, I will make you a great nation there. And so, as we know, and as we're going to see in the balance of this chapter, that when Jacob and all his family went to Egypt, they were a total of 70 people. But after they were in Egypt for 400 years, they came out of Egypt with 600,000 young men over the age of 20. And when you add the women and children, there were like 2 to 3 million people. And so God's plan is to take them to Egypt, not so that they would stay there, but that they would go back as a large nation that is large enough to not only occupy a Canaan, but to conquer all of those Canaanite nations down there. And so the first one he's saying, don't fear to go down there, for I will make a great nation to you. And the second promise is I will, you know, he's basically saying, I will go down with you to Egypt. So that is, seems like, you know, not that significant, but that is truly the most significant thing, right? Is that the Lord is with you. So it doesn't matter where you are, if the Lord's with you, you're in a good place, right? You're in his will. You're in a blessed place when the Lord will go anywhere with you. And so he gives him that second promise and assurance that the Lord is with him. The third one is that he says, I will also surely bring you up again. And so what the Lord is communicating there is that they're going to Egypt is only for a time. And this goes back to the promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 through 16. And that is that he told Abraham that he was going to, that Abraham's descendants would go to another land and they would be oppressed there. But after 400 years, they would return to the land of Canaan. And so that's the second promise that he makes here. Or the third promise. And then lastly, he says, Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. And so what he's communicating there is that Jacob is going to die in Egypt, and Joseph is going to be there when he dies to take care of him when he dies. He'll be the one that would close his eyes after he dies. And so he gives Jacob that assurance. And we see in verse 5, it says, then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. So he no longer hesitated. After he received the word from the Lord, he was confident and he was willing and able to go ahead and move forward. Verse 6, so they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob and all of his descendants with him. And so now, for the balance of this, or at least the next portion of this chapter, it's basically going to document the individuals who went into Egypt, so that you could see like the sort of the foundation of the nation at the very beginning. And then we'll see when we get into Exodus, the number of people that went out. And so he basically goes through all of his children, and he talks about the, you know, the sons and the grandsons of his sons. And so we can read here. It says, now these were his sons and his son's sons, his daughters and his son's daughters, and all the descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Now, these were the names of the children of Israel: Jacob and his sons who went to Egypt. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ahad, Jakid, Zohar, and Shual, the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi were Gershon, Kahath, and Merari. The sons of Judah were Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hemuel. The sons of Issachar were Tola, Puva, Job, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun were Sered, Elon, and Jalil. Verse 15, these were the sons of Leah, who she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram with his daughter Dinah. All the persons, his sons and his daughters, were 33. And so this first six sons were the sons of Leah. So he's going to mention the sons in their order of their birth, or actually based upon their mother, basically. So in this case, these are the six sons of Leah, and altogether, all the individuals here is a total of 33. Again, we see that usually, you know, only the sons are listed, but we see that Dinah is listed. She had a certain degree of prominence just because of that terrible thing that happened to her there at Shechem. And then the next two sons are the sons of Zilpah, and so he names those Gad one of the sons, and then Zibeon, Haggai, Shunai, Ezbon, Eri, Erodai, and Areli. Those were the sons of Gad. And then the sons of Asher were Jimna, Ishua, Issua, Beriah, and Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah were Habor and Melchiel. And then he goes on to the next wife, which is actually a concubine. And verse 18, it says, these were the sons of Zilpah, who Laban gave to Leah, his daughter. And these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, were Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenah, the daughter of Porta Para, priest of On, bore to him. The sons of Benjamin were Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Nehi, Rosh, Mupim, and Ard. These were the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan were Hushim. The sons of Naphtali were Jazziel, Guni, Jezer, and Shillim. These were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. So all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body, besides Jacob's sons, wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. And so we get that number of people, 70, who went to Egypt. Verse 28, then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. And so we see here Judah being the one that would go before, and we know that Judah had taken over Reuben's role as the head of the family. He was the recognized leader, and this is because we know that Reuben slept with Bilhah, who was Jacob's concubine, And then Simeon and Levi did that, those cruel things in Shechem. And so it was like Judah ended up by default becoming kind of the head of the family here. And we can see that in how he went there before Jacob to Joseph and so forth. In verse 29, it says, so Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father, Israel. And he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And so we see that just now the emotion of all of this and how, you know, you know, Joseph fell on his father's neck, and it says here, a good while, you know, they had a moment of just being able to release all of that emotion and to reconnect with each other at this point in time. And verse 30, it says, and Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive. And so, you know, Jacob, you know, his primary reason for going to Egypt is because he wanted to see his son, right? He wanted to see his son that he had not seen. It wasn't because, you know, his brothers had told him that, oh man, you should see Joseph. He's like this really big shot now. He's the second most powerful person in Egypt. And he's wealthy, and he's just the man. You know, he didn't go there for that reason, and that's not why he's rejoicing here. He's not rejoicing and saying like, "Oh wow, I got to see this really great, just the greatness of my son." He was rejoicing because he got to see his son's face again, and that he was still alive, and so. He was tremendously blessed by that. Verse 31, it says, then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers are those of my father's house who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock. And they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. So it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? That you shall say, your servant's occupation has been livestock from our youth, even until now. Both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is of an abomination to the Egyptians. And so here we see Joseph again with the wisdom of God, right? He's seeking to set it up so that his family would be able to dwell in a separate and distinct place in Egypt. So they would be in Egypt and they would come under the covering and protection and provision of Joseph, but they would not be infected by the pagan and immoral life of Egyptians. And so this would allow them to live in the land, but not be, you know, adversely impacted by it or absorbed by it. You know, that whole issue of Israel losing its distinctiveness and just becoming a part of Egypt and then and thereby thwarting God's plan to make them a great nation and to have the Messiah come out of them. And so Joseph probably realized that it's possible that Pharaoh might say, you know, once he saw the family, he'd say, you're the family of Joseph. You know, it's like if any, you know, person who's the family or the friend of Joseph is a family or a friend of me, you know, like he might want to bring him into the palace and bring him into the nation in that way. And so he tells them what they need to say in order to make sure that doesn't happen. And now notice that what he tells him to say is the truth. And, you know, and he tells him this because, you know, likely he knows that, you know, you get in front of like an important, powerful person and, you know, you're wanting to, you know, impress them or not to have them look down upon you. You might want to try to make yourself seem more prominent than you really are. But he just says, just tell them the truth, okay? And so that they'll end up where they need to end up. And one of the things we can take from this too is that, like, when we feel like we have to lie in order to for things to work out the right way, you know, that's not a good thing. You know, God doesn't use our lies to accomplish his purposes. So we should be that it's a thing of faith, right, to tell the truth. When we tell a lie to someone, what we're saying is that I'm more fearful of that person than I am fearful of God, or I'm more fearful that, like, if I don't tell the if I tell the truth, then things won't work out. You know, God won't be able to make every, you know, thing work out. But and so in any event, this is how Joseph is coaching them on what to do. And then the other thing is that, you know, even though Joseph was very powerful, he was, you know, second in command here in Egypt, he likely did not have the authority to put them into this land. This was a really good part of Egypt. And so, and it's kind of one of those things where, you know, when you're making a decision where it kind of benefits you, like we would use the word, like, you know, you're self-interested, that you want someone else to approve it, right? So, you know, even it could be like a senior VP at a company or really high up at the company, but you still would want to have some other person approve your expense report or something like that. That's the kind of the idea behind it. So, chapter 47. Then Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds and all they possess have come from the land of Canaan, and indeed they are in the land of Goshen." So he announces to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh told him, "Hey, you know, have your family come down. We'll take care of it. Everything will be good." So now he's telling them, okay, he's telling Pharaoh, they've made it here, they're in the land. And notice in the middle of that verse, he says their flocks and their herds. He's also planting the seed. You know, he's careful to you know, make this known. It's likely that information is information that Pharaoh doesn't have yet, right? So he wants to really make him to kind of point that out. Verse 2, it says, "And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh." So he didn't have all of his brothers come. He had five men from among his brothers, and he presented them to Pharaoh. And there's something about the number five. I don't know if it has something to do with Egypt or if it has to do with Joseph himself, but if you recall, remember when Joseph gave Benjamin five times more food when they sat down to eat, and he gave him five changes of clothes, whereas he gave his other brothers one change. There's something about five that that is a number of distinction, but no one really knows what the distinction is about that. Verse 3, it says, "Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, 'What is your occupation?'" So true to form, just as Joseph said, Pharaoh asked this question. And it's a kind of a worldly thing, right? That when you're in the world, people always want to know, what do you do? Like, what's your occupation? As if that's the most important thing about you. But I think in some ways, Pharaoh might be, you know, asking this question because he wants to be able to allow them to to operate in their occupation. You know, like if they had like a certain skill or something like that, that perhaps they could, he would put them not only, in the land, but he would also give them the opportunity to exercise their occupation and be successful and prosperous in that way. And Joseph anticipated that he would do that. And he wanted to make sure that they didn't come up with something that would cause Pharaoh to say, "Oh, come into the heart of the city," so to speak. And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." You know, just as Joseph coached, and it's really funny because it's like you're like really doubling down on it. It's like, you know, not only are we shepherds, but we come from a long line of shepherds, right? Everybody in our family. So we're full, if there's any taint, we're fully tainted in that regard. Verse 4, it says, and they said to Pharaoh, "We have come to dwell in the land because your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock." Then Joseph brought his father, Jacob, and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And so everything is working out just exactly the way that Joseph is planning for it to do and wanting it to do. And of course, Joseph's operating under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. And so everything that's happening here is happening just as God is laying out the plan and orchestrating things. But then we see in verse 7 something that is really amazing, because now we see Joseph now bringing his father forward before Pharaoh. And we see Jacob doing something that is amazing, right? He comes and he blesses Pharaoh. So here is Pharaoh. He is the most powerful man in the known world at this time. He's sitting there on his throne, and he's dressed, you know, impeccably as a monarch. He has all of his servants around him, all of the guards, all of the wealth and everything else. And then here comes this old man who is a shepherd, one who is looked down upon by the Egyptians. And he walks up to Pharaoh and he blesses him. What an amazing scene that must have been for, and it's in front of everybody, right? And everyone, we all know, like when we looked at what happened with Melchizedek, right? Melchizedek in blessing Abraham, one of the principles that we talked about is that the greater is the one who is to bless the lesser. And so here we have Pharaoh, who seems like he's the greater, but yet here Jacob, this old man who is basically coming to Pharaoh and to Egypt for help, and yet he's blessing Pharaoh. Well, there's a number of things that were going on here. One is that Jacob is likely blessing Pharaoh for all that he's done for his son. So it was really an expression of his thanks for how he has taken care of his son and how he's elevated him and put him in this position and everything. So it was just a show of gratitude. But also there is a recognition that Jacob has, right? That remember that promise that God made to Abraham. And it was in the very first time that the Lord spoke to Abraham and blessed him. He said that in your seed, all of the nations of the world will be blessed. And we know that that is through the Messiah, through Jesus. But the reality is that Israel is to be a blessing to the world. And so when I see this, like I have on my paper, I have Jacob blesses Pharaoh. And then above that, I have Israel blesses. And then Pharaoh represents the world. So Israel blesses the world. And that is what's going on here, is it's really in part a fulfillment of that promise that Israel would be a blessing to the world. But, you know, even for us as Christians, that's something that we also should realize, that we also have an effect on the world. We're supposed to have an effect on the world. Wherever we go, we are to bring, right? We are bringing the presence of God with us, right? We are to be bringing peace, right? We're bringing a blessing. We're bringing the love of God. We are to be praying for people. We, you know, and that's what one of the things I've talked about a few times is how, like, even on our jobs, you know, people don't realize it, but we could be a blessing to our jobs, in that, you know, when we're trying to accomplish something, or we're trying to do our best work, in doing our best work, working as unto the Lord, we're blessing that company. When we are praying, you know, for our company, praying for our boss, praying for success, you know, we are blessing our company. So those are just some examples. But again, this is just an amazing thing here that's taking place, where this man, this old man, is blessing Pharaoh. And verse 8, it says, Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How old are you?" And verse 9, and Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." And so here, you know, Pharaoh likely, you know, looking at him and saying, "Wow, you look like you're pretty old, you know, like how old are you?" Now, you have to remember that, you know, Jacob has spent his whole life, you know, being a shepherd, right? He's been out in the sun, working hard, you know, and he's been through a lot. And that's what he kind of gets at in verse 9. He tells him, he says, "I'm 130 years old, okay?" But he says, "Few and evil have been the days of my life, and they have not attained to the days and years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." So he's saying, you know, his father Isaac lived to the age of 180 years, and his grandfather Abraham lived to be 105 years old. And he's saying, here I am, 130 years, and I'm worn out, I'm beat up, I'm not coming anywhere near the age of my father and my grandfather, and I likely won't. And then he goes on, you know, he talks about the fact, he says, "Few, even though I'm 130 years old," he says, "few are my days." And he's, that's explained by the fact that he compared to his father and his grandfather, he hasn't lived that long. But he says, "Evil are those days." And what he's saying here, he's not complaining about his life, but he's just stating a fact. And so evil, that means to break, or to break in pieces. And so what he is saying is merely that my life has been hard. I've lived a hard life. and that's what you're seeing. When you look at me and he's like, "How old are you?" What you're seeing is a man who's lived a hard life. And we can go through and look at all the things that happened. Number one, he grew up in a home where his father favored his older brother Esau. Number two, his brother Esau hated him. Number three, he was forced to work for his uncle for 20 years, who changed his wages 10 times. He doesn't get to marry the one that he worked all those years for, But, you know, he, to his surprise, he ends up being given the sister of the one that he really loved. What a shock that was for him. And going and having to flee from his family because he had tricked his brother out of his birthright, he doesn't get to see his mother again and before she dies. Number four, or I don't know what number it is, his hip is pulled out of joint by God when he wrestled with God. And so he ended up walking with a limp from that point on. He has a daughter named Dinah who gets raped. His sons, Simeon and Levi, kill the entire village as revenge, putting the entire family in danger of being killed by the other surrounding Canaanite nations. His most loved wife dies in childbirth. He lives for 22 years believing that his favorite son, Joseph, is dead. So he's lived a hard life, and that's, you know, what shows, and that's really what he's talking about when he's talking to Pharaoh here. Verse 10, it says, so Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. And Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Then Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with bread according to the number in their families. And so we see here that Joseph provided for his family, but he did so in a honorable way, with integrity. He could have just loaded him down, right? He could have given him a whole bunch of wealth and everything else and gave them more than other people, but he did it in a way that where he wasn't showing favoritism. He was doing it in a way that demonstrated integrity. Verse 13, it says, now there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And there again, we see him acting with integrity. You know, he's doing everything he's doing as a steward. He's doing it for Pharaoh, for the land of Egypt. So he's not taking any of this money to himself. Everything that he's collected, he's giving into Pharaoh and into Pharaoh's house. Verse 15, it says, so when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For the money has failed. Then Joseph said, give your livestock and I will give you bread for your livestock if he is gone. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the cattle of the herd, and for the donkeys. Thus he fed them with bread in exchange for all their livestock that year. When that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, we will not hide from my Lord that our money is gone. My Lord also has our herds of livestock. There is nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants of Pharaoh. Give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land may not be desolate. Then Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for every man of the Egyptians sold his field because a famine was severe upon them. So the land became Pharaoh's. So here we see that there's a progression. First, the money ran out for the people. Then the livestock was given, and then it ran out. And then the people and their land the next year. And so, you know, a lot of people could look at this and say, man, this Joseph, man, he is a tough guy and he is a cruel man and he is a wicked person. This is the biggest transfer of wealth ever. You know, we talk about the rich getting richer, you know, like today, you know, we got people talking about how, you know, there's big transfer of wealth and everything else. And so this would seem like the ultimate of that. But in reality, there's a lot of God-given wisdom going on here with Joseph, okay? If he did not require that every time they came to him that they gave him something, then a value to them, and that was scarce, then the grain that he had to make last for that seven-year period of famine wouldn't have lasted very long, because it would be like, you know, easy come, easy go, right? If he just said, oh, here, just take it, just take the grain, you know, take as much as you like, they would just eat it up or whatever, and then just keep coming back, and the grain wouldn't last that long. But if they had to give something of value, and again, that is scarce, like money, livestock, etc., then they're not going to waste it, and they would be making sure that, you know, it would last as long as possible. And so that was again a thing of wisdom that came from the Lord. And then also in this situation, it creates the motivation to continue to work and to be productive. And we're going to see that in these next few verses here. So verse 21, it says, as for the people, he moved them into the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt to the other end. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had rations allotted to them by Pharaoh, and they ate their rations which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their lands. Then Joseph said to the people, indeed, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh, and four-fifths shall be your own as seed for the land and for your food and for those of your household and as food for your little ones. So they said, you have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. And so here we see that we got to the point where now they had sold everything, right, including their land and themselves. And so Joseph, we see here just how kind and generous he is. He gives them seed to sow, and when whatever they grew, that he would allow them to keep 80%, and they would give basically a tax, which is 20%. And so 80-20, right? A 20% tax is certainly great by our standards today, right? Especially given that that land didn't belong to them, and they didn't have to pay any rent or anything for that land. But the other thing is that Pharaoh owned everything. You know, they had basically everything to him. And so the fact that they were allowed to keep anything was a blessing to them. And we see their gratitude even. He had saved their lives is the way that they felt about it. And so that was another thing that was wise about the progression here. If he had started out in trying to tax them by 20%, they would have revolted probably. But they were able to realize that everything belonged to Pharaoh. And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, that's the same thing with us and God. Sometimes it takes a while for the Lord to show us that everything belongs to him. It takes a while for him to show us how fragile our lives are, and how even, you know, irrespective of how much money we may have earned or how much money we have saved or we have stored up or whatever the case may be, or how great we think we are ourselves, he has a way of showing us just how great he is and just how weak and needy we are. And that's one of the things that we've been seeing even in this epidemic, how the Lord can just in an instant, he can take all of the world and all of our pride and our arrogance and everything else, and just show us how you know, just, you know, it's so easy for the Lord to just show us his power, his greatness. But again, this is this really spoke to me to say we shouldn't be complaining or be reluctant in giving the Lord anything, right? Because it all belongs to him anyway, right? Just like here with these people in Pharaoh, everything belonged to Pharaoh. So let's just finish out these last few verses. Verse 26, and Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day, and that means at the day of the writing, you know, at the time of Moses, that Pharaoh should have one-fifth except for the land of the priests only, which did not become Pharaoh's. So there was just like a 20% tax that was collected for years and years and years. So Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there and grew and multiplied exceedingly. So the Lord blessed them and caused them to grow and to multiply exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Now if I have found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt, but let me die with my fathers. You shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place." And he said, "I will do as you have said." Then he said, "Swear to me," and he swore to him. So Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. And so here we see that Jacob wanted to, it was important to him that he would not be buried in Egypt, but rather that he would be buried in Canaan. And this is demonstrating the faith that Jacob had in the promises of God, that even though they were in the land of Egypt, that the promises of God were in Canaan, that was the land that the Lord was giving to them. And that promise that God made that he's going to bring the family out of Egypt and back to Canaan, Jacob was believing that. And so he made Joseph swear a solemn oath by putting his hand under his thigh, just like Abraham had his servant Eliezer put his hand under his thigh when he asked him to go and pick a wife for his son Isaac. And so Joseph promised that he would do so, and he kept that. We're going to see that promise was kept. So we're going to stop right here at the end of chapter 47, and Lord willing, we will cover chapters 48 through 50 next week and finish up